Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Sports Talk in the Icebox here on a beautiful Wednesday afternoon, coming to you from the studios here at Penguin Radio, radio.dominican.edu. I'm Jeff Safford. I'm your host for the program this afternoon. We got a lot of sports-related topics to get to in this hour. We have the airs till 4 o'clock. Ball is Life is coming up after my show. Just to give you a quick look at what the show is going to look like this afternoon, we're going to start with kind of the big news coming out this afternoon, the news of Aaron Hernandez and how that trial ended up playing out in court. We're going to talk a little about that, and the NBA playoffs are quickly coming up starting on Saturday. Today is the last day of the regular season in the NBA. We're going to get to some of the scenarios with where teams are going to be seeded and what some of the matchups may look like and what matchups may be better for whom and all of that mumbo jumbo. And we're also going to get in some Major League Baseball talk. You know, we're a week plus now, I guess, into the season. Last Monday was opening day around Major League Baseball. We've had some teams doing pretty well. Kansas City Royals, one team in particular, it's really looked good, and others not so good. So we'll hit on what's looking good so far, what isn't, maybe some injury news, and what to expect with the games today, and also look at some of the finals as well. And in our last segment, we're going to hit on the Boston bombing. The Boston bombing was the terrible tragedy that happened on the day of the Boston Marathon in Boston 2 years ago today. April 15th, 2013 was the date of that horrific day. There was a lot of events going on in Boston this afternoon, so we're going to hit on that and see how maybe the recovery process is still going on even today in Boston over that. All right, so that's going to be our show this afternoon. A lot of stuff talking about Boston today. It's kind of, we're going wicked far today. Yeah, we're going to Harvard Yard, even though it's kind of two things going with Boston that I'm sure a lot of people from Boston would like to forget. Right, well, to the first thing, we're going to go talk about Aaron Hernandez. Aaron Hernandez, of course, the former New England Patriot tight end, was one of the better tight ends in the NFL. I mean, he was a fabulous player. Him and Rob Gronkowski were supposed to be one of the greatest tight end tandems ever assembled in the NFL. They had one fabulous season together, and then in the summer of 2013, this case came up with Aaron Hernandez and his involvement in a killing of Odin Lloyd, a young former semi-pro football player, and he was found today of those, he was found guilty of those crimes for the 2013 killing. Hernandez now faces life in prison without parole in the Massachusetts Institution of Corrections. That's kind of a mouthful there, but that's where Aaron Hernandez is heading, and the future does not look bleak for a man that is only 25 years old. I mean, he's only a couple years older than I am. I'm 22, and there's a lot of other students here at Dominican that are in their early 20s, you know, 20, 21 years old. And it's hard to think that your life is in 4 years could possibly just be over. You know, frankly, I mean, you're going to spend the rest of your life in a jail cell. And oddly enough, the Massachusetts Corrections facility that he will be assigned to is only a mile and a half away from Gillette Stadium. I mean, Gillette Stadium being the stadium that the New England Patriots play their home games, how ironic is that? I mean, it's like the grass really is greener on the other side when you're thinking about Aaron Hernandez's situation, because, you know, he's going to be locked up in this max protection facility where he's not going to see the light of day, but yet a mile and a half away, there's going to be where he made all this money. And let's not forget that he left a $40 million contract on the table when the Patriots released him and all of this terrible information started to come to light. And I mean, he just threw his life away. You just have to ask yourself why someone would do something like this. I mean, Hernandez was on his way to a fabulous NFL career. He was already considered one of the better tight ends in the NFL at the time. And, you know, all he needed to do is keep his nose clean and stay out of trouble. And he just is unable to do that. And in looking, you know, from the NFL's perspective, that can't look great for them either, especially with all of the other bad things that have been flying around the NFL, you know, whether it be the domestic violence probably being the main issue going on with the NFL. But I find it very odd, you know, that this is pretty much, if not the biggest news story, one of the biggest news stories in general today, that Aaron Hernandez was found guilty and he will spend the rest of his life in prison. I find it interesting that you don't hear a peep out of the NFL. You know, they're not saying, you know, they're not coming out and saying, like, we're happy that the case reached its verdict. They're not saying we're disappointed that one of our own is getting locked away for life. I mean, they're just staying the hell away from this whole situation. And I don't know if that's such a great look for the NFL. I mean, the NFL, to me, with all of these issues, it's been very evident that they've tried to stay away from a lot of it. But in this day and age, I just don't think the NFL can afford to do that anymore. I mean, there's way too much stuff going around on social media. You know, everybody that has a computer and an internet connection can have an opinion and can post it to the NFL. They can talk right to the NFL on social media. And, you know, you've seen tweets go viral, or, you know, responses go viral, or, you know, you've seen so many things just blow up on social media. And the NFL, you know, they can't be like the Illuminati anymore. It's just way too transparent. And the NFL, I think, needs to not only clean up their image with some of their players that have done all these horrible things and find a way to avoid these situations, but they also need to, you know, they need to stick their neck out a little bit here and say what everybody else is thinking, that, hey, you know, Aaron Hernandez was a scumbag. You know, like, he was a terrible person. He just murdered somebody in cold blood, and that's not something that we stand for as a league, or, you know, as just, you know, for the sake of humanity. I mean, the NFL, you know, of course, they're doing just fine financially, but I think that we will see them, you know, I don't want to see it happen, because I love football. I mean, and who doesn't love to watch the NFL on Sunday afternoons? I mean, it's a great part of American culture, and, you know, it's just a great way to spend an afternoon. And, you know, a lot of that could be put in jeopardy if the NFL can't clean up their act, because they're going to start being slowly looked at in a more negative way by everyone else in society. And I don't think that that's something that the NFL wants. I mean, obviously not, because then they'd stop making money. But there's a way, I guess the point of the whole thing is, there's still a way for the NFL to make their money and to be able to pay all the bills and whatnot, and not be this kind of, you know, PR giant that doesn't try to do anything wrong or say anything wrong, you know? You know, because players like Aaron Hernandez and Greg Hardy and Ray Rice and all these other guys that have been involved in these domestic violence cases, they're, you know, they're part of the NFL too, and kind of on a different front. So is Junior Seau, the man who had brain injuries due to playing in the NFL and ended up killing himself. I mean, that's all things that the NFL is a part of, and they need to take responsibility for all of these wrongdoings and mistakes, and I'm not sure if they really have, to be honest with you. There's a lot of other things that I think that could be done with this case, and granted, this Aaron Hernandez case may not leave the biggest black eye on the NFL, but you know, it's still worth asking the question, how did this man end up even on an NFL roster? It's a little bit of an interesting debate, you know, and it's not like other cases we've seen with homicides where the guy just went off one time, you know, just kind of lost it. You know, that wasn't the case with Hernandez. Hernandez had a little bit of a history of some, you know, questionable conduct, I guess you could say, going back to his days at the University of Florida. And I don't know if the NFL was able to, obviously they weren't able to, but they weren't able to, you know, kind of nip that problem in the butt. Hernandez was still hanging around with all these sketchy guys, and it just led him down the wrong path. And granted, the NFL isn't fully to blame for this. Absolutely not. Aaron Hernandez is certainly the first guy you would point the finger at, but I guess the bottom line for the league is that they just cannot let this type of stuff happen. I mean, you just don't see that. You know, the NFL is a workplace, and you don't see that happening in a lot of workplaces where, where you go to the water cooler and, where's Mike? Oh, he got convicted for first-degree murder, so he's not with us anymore. You know, that's not exactly talk around the water cooler, so to speak. You know, you might see someone lose their job because they weren't doing a good enough job with getting their work in on time or whatever. But, you know, you just don't see it in workplaces where guys are losing their jobs to play football because they killed a guy or they, you know, beat up their wife or whatever it is. I mean, the NFL just needs to clean up its act, and I think it's a problem that is going around and is not going to go anywhere, especially like what I said with social media. It's just everything is more transparent now, and things are just going to keep getting more transparent. The world is always watching. It's not just Robert De Niro watching you anymore. So that's that for that segment. A lot of interesting things to think about with Aaron Hernandez. But bottom line, he is headed to a MIC, Massachusetts Institution of Corrections facility, for first-degree murder along some other charges that they threw on as well. You know, not having a registered gun and, you know, illegally holding a gun and all these other cases as well. But the big one, of course, is the first-degree murder charge that will have him have Hernandez in prison for life. Okay, so when we come back from the break, we're going to talk about the NBA playoffs, and this being the last day of the regular season seems like a good topic to touch on, and we'll talk about the playoff scenarios and some of the big games to watch tonight. So we'll be right back here on Sports Talk in the Icebox, here with Jeff Safford on radio.dominican.edu, right after this short break.
Project. This new mom wants her kids' science project to thrive. Too bad she hasn't cracked a science book since 1985.
A metathesis reaction?
Compounds, mixtures, and elements. Even this baking soda volcano is too big of an experiment. Whoa, now she's completely forgotten the periodic table. Now she's burning a hole through the kitchen table.
Burning with science.
But her kids' love for their mom is truly transparent. Proof you don't have to be perfect to be the perfect parent.
Don't tell Dad.
You you don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Thousands of siblings in foster care will take you just as you are. For more information on how you can adopt, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
It takes 12 years to create a graduate. It takes about the same time to create a dropout. The difference between a child becoming one or the other could be you. Studies prove that reading to a child regularly dramatically improves reading skills. And kids who read well by third grade are four times as likely to graduate. So United Way is calling for 1 million volunteers over the next 3 years. We're asking you to step up, make a pledge, tutor a child who needs help, mentor a kid who needs someone on their side, volunteer to read to children, make a difference. Because when a child advances, we all advance. Entire communities improve. The path to success or failure starts long before graduation day. And the difference between a graduate and a dropout could be you. Be a reader, tutor, or mentor. Give. Advocate. Volunteer. Live United. Take the pledge. Go to liveunited.org now. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. It's Sports Talk in the Icebox here on radio.dominican.edu. About 3:20, call it 3:18 if you want to be precise, here on the West Coast. You're listening live here on Penguin Radio. Jeff Safford here with you in the studio. We just got done with our talk about the Aaron Hernandez trial and the verdict. Aaron Hernandez being convicted, first-degree murder. And now we are going to move on to the NBA playoffs and talk about what will be happening with that. Today, of course, is not the first day of the playoffs. Today is the first day of the last day, excuse me, of the NBA regular season. 170 days and 82 games per team, and we are finally right at the end, day 170. And we have a number of games that have playoff implications, and there are still is a ton of stuff that still needs to be figured out in terms of playoff seeding. The games that do affect playoff seedings, I'll list them off for you: the Spurs and the Pelicans. The Spurs trying to wrap up the number two seed, while the Pelicans are still trying to seal their fate in the playoffs, try to get a playoff spot, and the number eight seed, which would match them up in the first round against the local team, the Golden State Warriors, who are the number one seed in the playoffs. Jazz and the Rockets. The Rockets looking to improve their seedings with a win. The Thunder and Timberwolves. Thunder in the number nine spot. They would need a Pelicans loss to the Spurs to be able to become eligible playoffs. And then they would need to get a victory tonight against the Minnesota Timberwolves, who is a ball club that does not have a good record at the moment, of course. It's 16-65, one of the worst in the NBA, but they have shown a few glimmers of hope, a few glimmers of maybe something better to come in the future. They did play the Golden State Warriors, the best team record-wise in the NBA, played them pretty tough. They played them, I want to say, on Saturday night, last Saturday night, and it was a pretty close game throughout. And another game that has some meaning to it, the Magic and the Nets. The Nets trying to sneak into the playoffs. They are on the outside looking in. And the Pacers and the Grizzlies. The Pacers need a win tonight to get into the playoffs. And there are a lot of crazy playoff scenarios. A lot of teams have clinched playoff berths. You look at the West, the only playoff berth that's still up for grabs is that number eight spot. But it's the seeding that gets crazy, and in the East, there's some kind of different crazy things going on as well. When you look at the East, the 3 and number 4 seeds are up for grabs, and the number 8 seed. So the number 1 seed, the number 2 seed, the Hawks are the number 1 seed. That's clinched. The Cavs, Cleveland Cavaliers, they will be the number 2 seed. The number 3 seed could be either Chicago or Toronto. Chicago will be seeded number 3, and Toronto will be number 4 if the Bulls win at home. If the Bulls beat Atlanta, who they're playing tonight, or the Raptors lose at home to Charlotte, and the Bulls would be the 4 seed, and Toronto the number 3 if Toronto wins and the Bulls lose. So, you know, to make that more simple, if the Bulls win, they're number 3. If Toronto loses and the Bulls lose, the Bulls are still 3. So, Bulls, if they win, they're 3. Make it simple for them. But if Toronto wins, they still need a Bulls loss to be the number 3 seed. So, really, all that will affect is who has home court in that first round series. We know that the Bulls and the Raptors will be playing each other in the first round. And for the number 8, seed, I guess I'll say the Milwaukee Bucks will be the 6th seed, and the Boston Celtics, a bit of a surprise. They've had a late season push to make it into the postseason. Good for them, a young team that really had a lot of question marks, and you know, they made some good late season acquisition. Isaiah Thomas has been fantastic for them down the stretch. Maybe a sixth man of the year candidate, and Crowder has done well along with their other pieces, young talent they have in place. Kelly Olynyk, Avery Bradley. I mean, that's a team to look out for. I think the Celtics, you know, especially with all those draft picks they have compiled up, you know, interesting story them. They'll be playing the Cavs. So Bucks and Cavs, Bucks and Celtics, 6 and 7, and then the number 8 seed in the East. Indiana clinches a playoff spot with a road win at the Grizzlies, or if the Nets lose to the Magic. Brooklyn wins if the Pacers lose, and they pick up a victory. So those are kind of the playoff seedings in the East. It's not super crazy, but here's where things will get very wild here in the Wild Wild West. This is just try to bear with me here. This is not going to be easy to try to explain, but I'll try my best to try to explain all of the different scenarios that can take place with these seedings. All right. See, let's start with the San Antonio Spurs, just to start with the team. The Spurs will be the number 2 seed if they win at New Orleans. Okay, that's pretty easy to understand. They will be the number 3 if the Spurs lose and the Rockets lose at home to the Utah Jazz. The Spurs would be the number 5 seed if the Spurs lose and the Rockets win and the Grizzlies lose. And they'd be the 6th seed if the Spurs lose and they're both the Rockets and the Grizzlies win. So they could be the number 2 seed or the number 6 seed, which is hard to believe. But the other teams that have a shot at the number 2 seed are the Los Angeles Clippers and the Houston Rockets. The Clippers would be the number 2 seed if both the Spurs and the Rockets both lose, they'll be number 2. And they will be the number 3 if the Spurs or the Rockets win. So either one of those two win, they will be the number 3 seed. Houston, the other team that has a chance at number 2, will be the number 2 if they beat Utah and the Spurs lose. Okay. They'll be number 5 if they win and the Spurs win, or the Rockets and the Grizzlies both lose. So if the Rockets lose and Grizzlies lose, they'll be number 5. And if the Rockets win and the Spurs win, they'll be number 6 if the Rockets lose and the Grizzlies win. So there's another one. They could be 2 or 6 or 5. Or and then the Grizzlies would be number 5 with a win and both the Spurs and the Rockets losing. And they'll be number 6 if they lose and the Spurs and Rockets both win. So a lot of scenarios revolving around the Spurs, the Rockets, the Grizzlies, and the Los Angeles Clippers. So I know that's a lot of information, and like I said, I tried to go over it as best as I can, but man, you know, when you're playing 81 games, you would think you would get a little bit of leeway here somewhere, but man, I mean, you got all these teams that have very good records and are all very solid basketball teams that all play very differently. You know, you look at the Spurs, they're kind of, you know, that motion offense, they're moving without the ball, they have the old veteran players, and, you know, when you look at the Grizzlies, they're a pounded out half court, play defense, you know, and just get enough offensively. The Rockets are more of an offensive team with James Harden and Dwight Howard, and, you know, and the Clippers are the high-flying Lob City, and I mean, it's just crazy to look at all these teams and how different they all are, and but yet how close they all are. And, you know, it's great for the NBA that, you know, they're probably saying for ratings and stuff that to the very last day of the regular season, things are competitive and teams are fighting for their playoff lives. And, you know, and I didn't have, for all those scenarios, I didn't even mention the scenario with the number 8 seed. I kind of mentioned it earlier with the Pelicans and the Thunder. And that's a little bit more of an easy scenario to understand. It's pretty simple of that the Pelicans clinch the playoff spot with the win over the Spurs, or if the Thunder loses to Minnesota, and it's pretty much not vice versa. Oklahoma City needs a Pelicans loss. That's pretty much period. But they also need a win. So they need pretty much, you know, they can't, you know, if both teams win, then the Pelicans are in. That's where the two are different. And, you know, looking at those two teams, the Pelicans or OKC, you know, who would fit better to play against the Warriors? That's kind of a tough argument. I don't really think the Warriors care too much, to be honest with you. I think they would feel pretty confident against either one of those teams, especially because of how good they play at home, that they can come into their building the first two games and probably win the first two games at home in the playoffs and be in pretty much complete control of the series from that point on. And they have a chance to finish with one of the best home records in the history of the NBA. The Bulls are the only team that will have a better record at home than the Warriors. Warriors have a chance to get themselves in the top three and finish 39-2 at home this season with a victory over the Denver Nuggets, who are coming to town this evening. It'll be interesting to see how much the stars play for the Golden State Warriors after they're coming off that big win against Memphis the other night. And man, was Klay Thompson phenomenal in that game. Holy wow. I mean, he was just spectacular. You know, it was taken for granted. I mean, he had close to 40 points in the first half. I think it was scored 26 in the second quarter alone, and he was just unconscious from shooting behind the three-point line. And to think that he's not even the Warriors' MVP candidate. You know, you look at Steph Curry, who's been getting a lot of buzz about him being the MVP. We're going to have to see who the real MVP will be in a couple weeks when the NBA throws that out there. And with the Wild Wild West, the one team I didn't mention with the playoff race, is the Portland Trail Blazers. And the reason being that the Portland Trail Blazers are locked in to the number 4 seed because they are a division champion. Now, this has been getting a little bit of controversy, especially from one quote made by Doc Rivers today, where he said he called the playoff system flawed because it allows teams like the Blazers, who would have the 6th best record in the conference, to be able to have a higher seed because they won their division. And some teams are not cool with that. And I guess I can understand where that would play. And I do understand that, you know, you think if you have a better record than another team, then it should be obvious that you receive a higher seed than them. But, you know, when you have a system in place with putting importance on a division champion, then that's the way it goes. And I honestly believe that that's the way that it should be in the NBA. I think they should put importance on division title winners. Because if you don't, if you just put the top 8 teams seeded, you know, it doesn't matter, just the best record wins, then why do you even have divisions to begin with? I mean, I think that's a fair argument to make, you know, because then nobody's going to give a crap about division records or, you know, division opponents even, other than the fact that they'll see them more than a lot of other teams. You know, the division standings will mean nothing. The champion in the division will mean nothing. And I don't think that should be the case, because then nobody will pay any attention to that part of the game and it'll just be irrelevant. And I think division winners and things of that nature can be exciting. And frankly, most of the time, you're not going to see a team like the Blazers, who come in that with a worse record than other teams from other divisions. It's just not something that happens very often. I mean, you see it in the NFL. You know, we saw it this season with the Carolina Panthers winning in the South and having a bad record and hosting a playoff game, but that type of stuff just doesn't happen very often, and more times than not, you're going to have stuff that works out pretty well. I mean, just think about this scenario. It's not that likely, but if you put that position in place, what happens if a team wins a division, but at the same time, they don't have one of the 8 best records in the conference? So what? Are you going to put a division winner out of the playoff picture? That just seems like ludicrous to me. That just seems crazy. Like, you could win a division and it could mean, in the end, absolutely nothing. That's pretty much what Doc Rivers is insinuating, and I just don't think that that should be the reality. And I don't think there should be much debate about it. To me, it's, if your team is good enough, and you have a good enough record to make it to the playoffs, and if you want to win a championship, it shouldn't matter where you are seated. I guarantee you, with all those scenarios, that the Spurs could care less where they are seated. You know, the defending champion San Antonio Spurs, a team that's battle-tested, you know, has been through it all, seemingly. They don't care. You know, they're just going to go out there and play against whoever they are seated against, and they will do the best that they can to win a championship. And that should be the bottom line. When you get in the playoffs, you do everything in your power to win a championship, period. It doesn't matter where you are seated whatsoever. You know, obviously, if you're an 8 seed, you're going to have to go through a tougher team earlier, but ultimately, doesn't matter. If you're probably going to see that number 1 team eventually, whether it be in the first round or if it's in the conference finals, you're going to have to overcome that hurdle at some point. And if you win, you know, all you got to do is focus in on the series and try to do your best to win the series. Okay, well, it sure will be fun to watch the games tonight. The last games of the regular season, we'll have a clear view of who will be in the playoffs and where teams will be seated after tonight. And those games will be starting this weekend, and we'll get to start talking about these series next week on our show. So make sure you stay tuned in for that. And we are going to head to a break. When we come back, we're going to talk some Major League Baseball. So stay with us here on Penguin Radio, radio.dominican.edu. We'll be right back.
My name is Dale Pazinski. I'm 19 years old, and this is how I live United. I've always been kind of a computer geek, and I found a way to use those skills to help the homeless in my community. For people facing hard times, computer skills and a basic resume are so important. It may seem like a small thing, but it makes a huge difference in people's lives. So with United Way, I created a program where I work with the homeless. Together, we go through their whole job history, write a resume, and then save it on their very own USB drive. We provide workbooks and training certificates. I even budgeted for cupcakes so we can celebrate as a class when one of our people gets a job. That's huge. When somebody says, "Hey man, that job that you helped me apply for, I got it." That's what living United feels like to me. My name is Dale Pazinski. I help people achieve financial independence. So I don't just wear the shirt, I live it.
Give, advocate, volunteer, live United. Go to liveunited.org, brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Hey, Dr. Phil here. You know, I help people solve difficult problems every day, but one problem has me stumped, childhood hunger. Nearly 16 million children in America struggle with it. Luckily, the Feeding America network of local food banks collects surplus food, giving hope to hungry children and their families. But they need your help. Join me in supporting Feeding America and your local food bank at feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Jackie. Robinson is our diamond. He gave us his infinite strength by pointing us to a future when we were not ready. He was transparent by letting his light shine through even in the face of hate. He conducted a symphony that defines the best of what it means to be a team, to love one another as one. He took the heat and tension generated by his presence and cooled our irrational fears so that we can find true love in our greatest game. Jackie Robinson is who we are, what we play, when we remember, where we came from, how we forgive, and why we can endure the impossible. It is fitting that baseball is played on a diamond, a jewel that depends on its priceless history being present at all times, to remind us that our past reflects how we embrace our greatest future. He touched the four corners of our heart, took us home so that we could all be 42, not just today, but every day.
Welcome back to the show, everybody, to Sports Talk in the Icebox here on Penguin Radio, radio.dominican.edu. Jeff Safford with you. So you just listened to the voice of Doug Glanville, the ESPN analyst for Major League Baseball. Thought it was fitting to put that little clip in there because today is April 15th, is Jackie Robinson Day, the day that Major League Baseball honors Jackie Robinson, the player who broke the color barrier in Major League Baseball. Once a year, they have a day where the entire Major League Baseball honors Jackie Robinson by all wearing the number 42. Each player on each team wears Jackie Robinson's number 42. It is the only day that any baseball team can wear the number 42. And I think it's a very cool tradition, and, you know, it kind of sheds light on how far this country has come with all of these problems with racial oppression and just how we are just more accepting as a society. And I think it's great. And Jackie Robinson was a great player and was a great person. And he did a lot of things for a lot of different people. I mean, he grew up in a time where people just did not think the same way that people do today. I mean, a lot of people just had a lot of assumptions about people of color that just frankly aren't true. And it wasn't fair. And a lot of the problems that colored people have to deal with are not fair, but we're surely not at the point they were back in the 40s when Jackie Robinson was playing. So that was very interesting, and that little clip, and hopefully that resonates with all of our listeners. And just to move on now to just news going on in Major League Baseball. Like I mentioned, the baseball season has been going for a little over a week. Still got a long, long way to go, but some of the games going on this evening, we got a final already from today. The Nationals just thumped the Boston Red Sox 10-5, 10 runs on only 12 hits. That's a lot of thump. And the Yankees and the Orioles will continue their series tonight. Bud Norris on the mound for the Orioles, who really struggled in his first start of the year. The Cubs and the Reds will continue the series tonight. Jason Marquis, a name maybe you haven't heard in a long time, will make a start for Cincinnati. He hasn't started in Major League since 2013, but as an old veteran who has a lot of experience in the majors, he'll be going up against Travis Wood tonight. Then another interesting game, that Mariners and the Dodgers, as Tijuan Walker will go against the former Oakland Athletic Brett Anderson. The Dodgers won in a crazy game last night, winning in, I think it was the 12th inning. And so a lot of things going on in the major leagues. A couple of interesting stories. David Wright is headed to the disabled list. David Wright, the all-star third baseman for the New York Mets. And just when you thought the Mets were starting out decent this season, David Wright is headed to the DL. Zach Wheeler looks like his season is done. Maybe some San Francisco Giants may be kind of secretly happy about that. If you don't remember, the Giants traded Zach Wheeler to the Mets for Carlos Beltran, a player that they were unable to keep. So they traded away one of their best pitching prospects for a guy that was around for 3 months and then left. So not the best trade that the Giants have made over the last couple of years. And just other news around the league, there's only one undefeated team left, and it's the Kansas City Royals. The Royals sitting at 7-0. The Detroit Tigers were the other team that was sticking around undefeated for a while this season, but they lost a game earlier this week to the Pittsburgh Pirates to end that streak. But man, going back to the Royals, they have just completely been decimating teams this year, starting season at 7-0, and they have given up the least amount of runs in the entire major leagues. They've given up 18 runs in 7 games, which is very good. And they're also in the top 3 in the majors in runs scored. Only a run or two behind the Red Sox and the Tigers for the top offense in terms of runs scored in the majors so far this year. So the Royals definitely coming back with a vengeance after that tough Game 7 loss in the World Series last year. A lot of times you see a team that comes that close, you know, during the last season just kind of has a hangover for the entire next year. It's like, you know, it's like you had too much Jack Daniels the night before and you wake up and you're just sluggish and you don't feel very good. And a lot of times that's what happens to a team that has something tough like that, but not so far for the Royals. It's very evident this early part of the year that they are determined, and they still have a big chunk of that roster still there. You know, Salvador Perez, you still got Eric Hosmer, you still got that great bullpen, and, you know, you still got some of that veteran pitching, even though James Shields is gone. And you got to believe that the Royals would be a team, if they are in contention, if they need to make a move for someone or feel like they could make a move to improve their team, that they could easily be a team that could look at, you know, going into the trades, or, yeah, going into the trades and trying to make some moves that way. And then on the other end of the spectrum, you look at the team that the Royals faced in the World Series and beat the Royals, the Giants, the defending champions. They have had a terrible start to their season, and, well, I guess I shouldn't say the start was that bad. The first series in Arizona went well. They took 2 out of 3 and won the first game of the series against the Padres last weekend, but since then, the wheels have just come off for the Giants. They lost the last 3 last weekend to the Padres and have dropped the first 2 of their series against the Rockies at home this week, have lost 5 straight games for the first time since last August. And it's not a great sign when you're already breaking records from August last year when you're in the second week of the season in April. And this team, first problem the last couple days has to be the offense. It's just been a really dry spell for the offense, and it's not so much that the team can't get hits, but it can't get that timely hit. There's been so many instances where the Giants have had runners in scoring position and they just can't bring the run in, where they have runners on second and third, or first and second, or first and third, or whatever the situation is. I saw a statistic last night that they probably got worse at after the game last night, that in their last 5 games, they are 3 for 35 is what I saw with runners in scoring position. I mean, and that's just atrocious, and you can't win baseball games that way. And, you know, and when you're not hitting, a lot of other things just kind of start to happen. And, you know, those ground balls, you know, on defense are going to start finding holes, and you're going to start making errors, and, you know, just things that would normally go your way just kind of stop going your way. And it's tough to get out of that funk. But the good thing about baseball is that it only takes a couple, you know. It takes a couple big at-bats. If you can get that, then you can, you know, get yourself out of it. And for the Giants, that's what it's going to have to come down to. Another problem they've had is injuries. You know, Hunter Pence, still waiting for him to come back. Casey McGee still has been out since he kind of tweaked his leg. Brandon Bell is back in the lineup. But once the... If the Giants can kind of right the ship here and kind of stay afloat until they can get healthy, then I think that they can be a factor in the National League. Because, you know, not every team in the National League is being competitive right now. I mean, the Rockies are first in the National League at the moment, sitting at 6-2. The Rockies? Are you kidding me? Well, I don't know if that's going to hold up. And a team that had one of the worst ERAs in the major leagues as one of the best so far this year. So, I mean, who knows if that's going to hold up. And the Nationals, a team that everybody was picking to win the National League, are sitting at 3-6, like right at where the Giants are. And they've had their fair share of issues as well. So, it's not going to be, I mean, it's just such a long season. It's not time to press the panic button yet. The Giants are favored to win tonight. They will look to salvage one game out of this 3-game set against the Rockies. Tyler Matzek will go up against Tim Lincecum, who pitched well in his first game, got the no decision, but pitched 7 strong innings last weekend in San Diego in his first start of the year. So we'll have to see what Timmy's got in store tonight for the San Francisco Giants. All right, we're headed to our last break of the night, or the afternoon, I should say. When we come back, we'll close it out with a little bit of Boston Marathon talk, Boston Bombing talk, and then we'll throw it to Ball is Life coming up in just less than 10 minutes. So stay tuned here on Penguin Radio, radio www.dominican.edu. We'll be right back.
Today in school, I learned a lot. In chemistry, I learned that no one likes me. In English, I learned that I'm disgusting. And in physics, I learned that I'm a loser.
Today in school, I learned that I'm ugly and useless. And in gym, I learned that I'm pathetic and a joke. In history, I learned that I'm trash.
Today in school, I learned that I have no friends. In English, I learned that I make people sick. And at lunch, I learned that I sit on my own because I smell. In chemistry, I learned that no one likes
me. In biology, I learned that I'm fat and stupid. And in math, I learned that I'm trash.
The only thing I didn't learn in school today...
The only thing I didn't learn...
is why no one ever helps.
Kids witness bullying every day. They want to help, but they don't know how. Teach them how to stop bullying and be more than a bystander at stopbullying.gov. A message from the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the show. We're in our last segment here on Sports Talk in the Icebox here on Penguin Radio, radio.dominican.edu, here with you on a Jeff Safford here with you on a beautiful Wednesday afternoon here on the campus of Dominican University. When's it not a good day to be in Northern California? That's what I like to say. I've gone to school in two other places. Been to school in Oregon, been to school in Massachusetts, and no better place to be than in Northern California. Sorry, not to brag to any of our other listeners that, you know, obviously we can listen to this worldwide, so who knows, I might have somebody listen to me in Switzerland, and hey, Switzerland I'm sure is pretty cool too. All right, well, our last segment, we're going to talk a little bit about the Boston bombing. Obviously, this is not a news story, but is worthy of bringing up today because, as I mentioned in the beginning of the show, today, April 15th, is the two-year anniversary of the Boston bombing. April 15th, 2013, at 2:49 p.m. in particular was the time of the first of two bombs that went off at the finish line at the Boston Marathon in Boston, Massachusetts. It was a terrible tragedy. A lot of attention, and I mean Boston Strong, and just the fans trying to stay, not just the fans, but just the community of Boston trying to kind of rally around each other. And today there was a lot of ceremonies that took place in the city of Boston, at one happening at 2:49, where the city had a close to Government Center in Boston, which is pretty much downtown. They had a moment of silence where the city came to a standstill, and the mayor was there, and they had a reverend come out and say a few words of, you know, kind of inspiration, I guess, of the spiritual variety, I guess is how you would say it. And, you know, it's always tough to talk about a tragedy like this, but the one thing that I picked up from listening to interviews from people and reading the stories coming from the Boston Globe newspaper is that people are from Boston are ready to move on from this, and they're ready to just really start the healing process and, you know, get over the fact that this happened. Obviously, I think this is a good thing for the city of Boston to do, to every year do this kind of memorial where people remember what happened on that day, kind of like what 9/11 does for so many people every year. It reminds people of all the lives that were lost. But at the same time, for everybody that was involved in the bombings and stuff, people still have a life to live. And it's just something that I think those people should learn how to do. And it sounds like people that were involved in it or had people that they knew were hurt by it or even killed, it sounds like from the mouth of, I guess, from the horse's mouth, I guess you could say, that Boston is you know, they're ready to move on. And I think that that's a good sign. And, you know, talk about a whirlwind for what's been going on in Boston today. You know, I'm sure if you're a Boston resident, you wake up in the morning thinking that, you know, today's April 15th, everybody's going to be talking about the Boston bombings and yada yada. And then you find out that Aaron Hernandez is convicted and found guilty. And so that story just kind of explodes and kind of takes on a life of its own. And not to, you know, shed away from the Boston story, but just a kind of a wild day, you know. It's kind of got everything going on. But one thing that I think it does do, having both of these things, is that, you know, closure is being drawn to a lot of these stories. You know, the Aaron Hernandez story drilled on for a long time, and now he's convicted, he's headed to jail, so a lot of closure there. And also the Boston bomber who is still alive of the two brothers. So one of the brothers was killed in an altercation with the police officers just a couple days after the bombings, but the other brother, who lived and was put into jail, was found guilty on 30 counts, and 17 of those counts are eligible for the death penalty. So, you know, he's convicted, he's not going anywhere, and so a lot of closure for that as well. And I think that is big for that community, that these two kind of blaring sports-related issues that have been floating around in Boston is, you know, they're being resolved. And now people can, or at least, you know, they're, you know, nothing will ever be able to fully heal those wounds, but at least these people have some closure to these issues. You know, people that were involved with these kind of terrible problems that happened in that community, you know, and they can successfully be able to move on with their life. And I think that's kind of the number one priority here, is that these people can move on, and because of our justice system and just, you know, being strong and being Boston strong. And I think that it's great for the community, and I think better days are ahead when you think of the community of Boston, another fabulous city. I would definitely recommend going out there to visit it. All right, so that's going to do it for us here on this Wednesday afternoon. We are out of time. I'd like to thank everybody out there for listening, whoever you are, and like to invite you to join me next week on another edition of Sports Talk in the Icebox. And just a reminder that there aren't too many left this semester. Is the semester, it seems crazy that this is already happening, but the semester already getting close, about three weeks to a month left of this semester. So we won't get to have our little sports conversations with each other for all that much longer, but don't worry, I'll be back next fall. All right, so that's it. I'd like to thank everybody again for listening. I'm Jeff Safford. Make sure you tune in again next week. Ball is Life is coming up next in just a few minutes. Have a great afternoon, everybody.